2 months from now marks the 10-year anniversary of the last time a NATO power shot down a Russian warplane. The incident occurred near the Syrian-Turkish border when a patrolling Turkish Air Force F-16 fired a guided missile at a Russian bomber on its way back from an attack against Syrian Turkmen brigades supported by Turkey. Now, Turkey says it issued 10 warnings within 5 minutes to two Russian warplanes headed into Turkish airspace and fired on one of the planes about 17 seconds after it flew into Turkey. Moscow claims its aircraft never left Syrian airspace, but both sides agree that the bomber was hit and crashed. The pilot and navigator ejected, but the former was shot and killed by Syrian rebel ground fire when parachuting down to the earth. A Russian Marine was later killed in the search and rescue operation that brought home the navigator. In the end, after several months of strained relations, Turkey's president wrote a letter to Putin expressing sympathy and deep condolences to the families of the two soldiers killed in the shootdown. After an apparent coup failed, the Turkish authorities reportedly even arrested the two pilots who downed the Russian aircraft on suspicion of links to the organization alleged to be involved in the coup attempt. So, water under the bridge, if not quite ancient history, it would seem. Except for the fact that NATO members are again, today, as we live and breathe, threatening to shoot down Russian warplanes that violate their airspace. In recent weeks, Estonia, Poland, and Romania have reported breaches by Russian aircraft. Just this week, Norway revealed that Russian aircraft have violated its airspace 3 times this year, after more than 10 years of no such intrusions. Last week, 3 Russian fighter jets reportedly violated Estonian airspace for 12 minutes, flying miles deep with their transponders off. The most extreme incident was in Poland, where NATO allies shot down three or four of roughly 19 Russian drones that wandered in from Belarus. Warsaw vows to shoot down any more Russian aircraft that violate its airspace, setting the stage for an incident similar to what happened with Turkey a decade ago. So, let's look back again at that downed Russian warplane in 2015 and talk about what could happen if Moscow loses another aircraft to NATO. Welcome to the Naked Pravda. Howdy, folks. I'm Kevin Rothrock, the managing editor of Medusa in English and the host of this podcast. On today's episode, I spoke to Dr. Olga Oliker, the program director for Europe and Central Asia at Crisis Group, where she focuses on foreign and security policies involving Russia and Turkey, which is great news for us because that's what I wanted to talk to her about. As I mentioned at the top of the show, this episode looks at Russia's recent airspace incursions in Eastern Europe and reflects on the last time a NATO power shot down a Russian warplane a decade ago at the Syrian-Turkish border. I know this show hasn't been coming out as regularly as before, but please like and subscribe or whatever else you do to boost a podcast and lift a podcaster's spirits. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts if that's still a thing. Climb the nearest mountain and shout about the Naked Pravda. Tell your bunkmates about this podcast when you're stuffed in a padded cell. Do your part. And now, on with the show. All right. So today I just wanted to talk to you a bit about the aerial airspace incursions or trespassing. Is there like a verb that you prefer here? Incursions maybe a little bit too hostile or no?
No, I mean, incursions are fine, okay. Right? It is unauthorized flying things in people's airspace. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. How do you view what's happened over the last few weeks? Because I know that obviously there's been several NATO members have made Article 4 declarations. There have been many deliberations. We had this sort of fiery debate at the UN Security Council. And I wonder, do you view this as these sort of complaints state that this is something new and this is a major escalation? Or is this Eastern NATO members sort of reframing something that's been happening?
So both. We've seen these incursions by drones, by other aircraft, by crewed aircraft, for well over a year. I'm pretty sure I haven't done the arithmetic on this. We also, for a very long time, basically since at least 2014, have had a lot of incidents in the Black and Baltic Sea regions between NATO and Russian naval vessels and aircraft. So these things happen. What's new is that the incident that took place the night of September 9th to 10th, when Poland shot down some of the Russian drones. So two things were, actually several things were new to that, but two that are relevant to the escalation dynamic. One is that it was like 19 drones that went into Polish airspace. And usually it's with the drones, it's onesies and twosies. And then the other was that the Poles shot them down. And that was the first time that a NATO member state had shot down a Russian aircraft in the NATO member state's airspace since Turkey shot down a Russian bomber in 2015. So that is new. And then the fact that Russia, right after that incident, Moscow was saying that they were willing to be part of investigation, that, of course, those weren't their drones, and they certainly didn't have any targets in Poland, but they'd be happy to, negotiate jointly, which, on the one hand is denial, but on the other hand can be interpreted as an effort to de-escalate. But then just days later, you've got three fighter jets in Estonian airspace. And the Estonians do what, and their NATO allies do what you normally do, which is you put some of your own aircraft into the air and you basically get the Russians out. And that's normal. But I mean, I think it does feel escalatory in the context, right? So the specific activity is something we're familiar with, but the dynamics of it and the timing does feel like it's something different.
So over the past few years, these incidents have occurred, but not so close together? Or for you, is the number of the drones that entered Polish airspace, that's the real crux here?
The number of the drones all at once,
yeah.
all in Poland.
Right.
Right. It's hard to say that they were, they just went off course. Or as the Belarusians said, that electronic warfare was what got them off course.
And the Belarusians claim to have even shot some down or shot at some.
So, what's interesting here is that the Belarusians say they shot some down, and I haven't seen any evidence that they did this time, but they have shot down Russian drones before. And I really liked the Belarusian statement about this because it was Belarus going on record with, you've got the right to shoot down random aircraft that aren't supposed to be there when they enter your airspace. You do, I do, we all do. I mean, it's a really lovely statement coming from Belarus, very helpful to the general, anything NATO might choose to do.
And are there different rules of engagement for shooting down a drone versus shooting down a fighter jet?
So I think there are different rules of engagement in the sense that each time the country has to make a decision about what it wants to do. And that factors in whether or not it thinks there's real escalation risk. It also factors in what's going to happen. So for instance, when Poland shot down those drones, the only damage, and then they let the other drones continue to fly until, they crashed. So the only damage that was done from the debris from the Polish weapons that were used to shoot down the drones, and that damaged a building. So anytime you shoot something down, you run the risk that it's your weapons that are going to do the damage and not the other person's aircraft.
And I know that the drones that entered Poland, they were the decoy type. They were not the attack type. Are these things so light that they, even when they do crash, they don't take out a building?
Yeah, they're styrofoam.
They
basically
bounce off a roof or something.
Yeah. Okay. Which means that the other thing you have to calculate is how much money do you want to spend destroying something that's really cheap?
15 grand and you spend $1 million missile or something.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it's to shoot down something that you can buy with the cash that happens to be in your wallet, even though you haven't used cash since February.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I know that earlier this month you wrote, and this is in the aftermath of the Poland airspace incursion, and before it became apparent that there was this escalatory sort of pattern, you wrote that the drone incident may actually instead help lower one source of escalation risk in this whole Ukrainian war business. Can you explain what you meant by that? And do you think that what's happened since has sort of erased that potential, or is it still there?
Yeah, I think we're not done yet. We're in a period where people are trying to figure out what their positions are and how they're going to respond. But if Russia thinks it risks real escalation by flying aircraft into NATO member states' airspace, it will probably stop doing it. If Russia thinks it does not risk escalation, but it gets other benefits, whether that's reconnaissance or making the NATO member states nervous or figuring out something about how well they can repel attacks, then it's going to keep doing it. So, and I, you know, so that's something else that goes into this calculation. What do you do when you're facing an incursion is what do you think your adversary will take from it? And of course, it's in Russia's interest to suggest that they'll just keep doing what they're doing, hence the fighter jets. But you kind of want to give this some time.
Do you think the reason for these incursions, is it these sort of small scale, we want to get reconnaissance, we want to do these little bits of intelligence, or is it more of a strategic, like we're needling away at NATO solvency or something like that?
So I think there are a lot of things potentially playing into this, and I am also sympathetic to the argument that what Russia is thinking is that this could be an effective coercive measure in convincing NATO members that if they continue to support Ukraine, they could face real danger. Now, of course, if the Russians are thinking that, they're wrong, because the reason the NATO member states are supporting Ukraine is because they already think they face a danger from Russia, and they diminish that danger by supporting Ukraine. So Russia does not change that by threatening them or flying aircraft into their airspace. But you can see why the Russians, who seem to have a really hard time understanding that NATO member states think they're a threat, although Russia keeps threatening them, but you know, the Russians say they don't understand why these countries think that Moscow poses a threat to them. So if you believe them, that they believe themselves when they say this, then, you know, they might just be acting coercively. The thing is, though, whether or not they intend to test NATO, they do test NATO, right? And then they do take lessons from it. Again, whether that's the purpose or it's not, if NATO flounders and argues and fights within itself each time something like this happens, it does not send a signal of unity. Also, if NATO does more damage to its own territory by shooting things down, you know, basically, if NATO spends a lot of money destroying things that are very cheap, all of this does not look good. So whether or not that's Russia's intention, it can have that effect. And then the other piece of this, again, whether it's Russia's intention or not, is that it can send the signal of, why are you sending so much air defenses to Ukraine? Shouldn't you figure out how to defend your own air?
So is it a good bargain for Russia in that sense? I mean, it sounds as though, obviously, there are escalatory risks, which is what we've been talking about. But based on what you just laid out, it seems like a reasonable decision by Russia to sort of do this.
Unless the escalatory risks are significant.
And so what's the scenario where it becomes too significant, where the cost-benefit shifts?
I mean, honestly, if the Russians lose a couple of aircraft, that is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
What that change, you know, because they don't have that much. I mean, they have a decent arsenal, but aircraft are expensive, drones are not.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Again, in 2015, when Turkey shot down the bomber, the Russian incursions did not stop. And in fact, you know, there was a huge incident between Turkey and Russia, and Turkey ended up apologizing. And then after the coup, arresting some of the people involved in this process. So it's not like that came out perfectly for Turkey. You know, there are differences between the dynamics in 2015 and the dynamics today, too.
Well, so let's get into that. There have been sort of increased calls. I saw that Sikorsky sort of said roger that to Trump, saying, go ahead and shoot down the next one. So it seems like everybody's primed to fire on the next Russian
jet. Shoot something. Yeah.
Shoot something, right.
I mean, the problem with that is that then when you decide not to shoot something because it's too expensive, because it's going to do some damage to you, you get into trouble with everybody who says, but you said you were going to shoot them down.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're sitting there explaining, yeah, but if we shot them down, we would have endangered this major metropolitan area, and we didn't want to do that.
Mm.
But you're caught on the back foot, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I actually think it's a mistake to make too much noise about how we're going to shoot them down.
Yeah. You don't think that's effective deterrence?
Not unless you're shooting already.
Okay. All right. And so...
I mean, empty threats are worse than no threats.
Right. Okay. Well, so looking back at what happened when the Turkish Air Force shot down a Russian attack aircraft near the Syrian-Turkish border in November 2015...
Defenseless bomber, as the as Vladimir Putin described it.
Oh, really?
Well, because it wasn't escorted, so it was technically defenseless, but I thought that was funny.
Okay, right. The poor little bomber. So with that incident, are there lessons that we could take as to, I mean, you just said that the situations are very different, but are there any lessons that you would take from that incident to what could happen if it happened again now in Eastern Europe?
I mean, look, I would say that one of the lessons is that this does not cause World War III.
Okay.
Even Russia agrees that you can shoot down aircraft in your airspace if they don't belong there. What Russia says is either it's not our aircraft or it's not your airspace or both. You know, in the case of Poland, it's not our aircraft. In the case of Estonia, it's not your airspace. I'm sure there have been cases where they've said both. But all of the escalation is intended, not to put too fine a point on it, to de-escalate. Doesn't always work that way, but at the core, nobody wants the direct hot war. You can talk about being at war already, blah, 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 but the fact is you are not, and you are not at war already because you worry about the escalation risks of such a war and that it could go nuclear, so you don't do it. So, you know, my instinct is to say that in the end, people will back down. What you want is for it to be your adversary who backs down and not you. And in the Turkish case, it was eventually Turkey that backed down, and that speaks to the relationship between Ankara and Moscow at that time. That is not, by any stretch of the imagination, the relationship between Moscow and any of the NATO member states that's overflying these days. So I think the lessons are it won't cause World War III, but also escalation management is hard. Mm-hmm. You don't always get what you want from doing these things. And I don't know if Ankara regrets that action of shooting down the bomber or thinks it was a good idea. My guess is that there are mixed opinions.
Did Russia stop sending warplanes into Turkish airspace?
Nope.
Right. Okay.
But the Russians were busy bombing Syria, right?
Right. So that Turkey didn't necessarily feel actually threatened is the takeaway.
Turkey
then?
They were bombing Turkey's. They were bombing groups that were aligned with Turkey in Syria.
Okay.
So Turkey was very unhappy about this.
Right.
Turkey had warned the Russians a few times, and then they decided to shoot down a plane. And they shot it down fast. Like it had been in Turkish airspace seconds. So it was very much this time we're doing it.
But they were warning the aircraft as it was approaching Turkish airspace.
They warned the aircraft, and I think a different aircraft turned around, but this one kept going.
Right. Okay. And so when that sort of thing happens, is the pilot receiving the warnings from the other side, or are they getting funneled through some kind of central command, or is the pilot just going into space that he's getting warnings saying you're going to get shot down?
So I don't know the answer to this question, but I believe the pilot is getting communication directly. I don't know how else that would work.
Sure. And then like his own commander is in his ear being like, keep going.
I have no idea.
Okay.
You are outside of my expertise. Somebody else may know the answer to that question, but not me.
Well, this could be a plot point in the next Top Gun movie. It sounds pretty, dramatic. So when Turkey shot down this Russian bomber, was the rationale that they're airspace is getting, the incursions are just too much as a sort of point of principle, or was there a genuine sense of being threatened? Because in the Eastern European cases, these states seem to feel, I mean, again, like it's not clear to me, you have some Russian decoy drones flying into your territory, and on one hand, it's like, well, this just can't stand. This is an issue of our sovereignty and so on. But there's not necessarily these drones are going to kill somebody, or someone, these fighters that are flying into our airspace are going to hurt somebody. So what's the nature of the threat? And I guess like at what threshold do you then say, okay, we're going to blow it up. We're going to kill whoever's inside this flying machine.
So, in principle, pilots can eject practice, sometimes.
And the Russian bomber pilots did eject.
Yeah, but I think...
One died on the ground.
One died, on the ground.
And a rescue soldier
and
died
the,
as well.
And the other got out eventually. Yeah. I think it was kind of a state, you know, it is very frustrating if a country that is supporting a different side in a war next door is overflying your airspace to do it. Yeah. And they keep doing it and you tell them not to, and they're not supposed to be in your airspace. So you warn them and you warn them and you warn them. And I do think once you've issued a whole bunch of warnings,
yeah,
you probably think you should act on them.
Right. And you think, are we at that point with Poland and the Baltic states and so on where, I mean, obviously Sikorsky's saying they're going
to
shoot.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of pressure to shoot something soon.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think you have very rational people in charge of these countries who are not going to act foolishly. So if they're going to shoot something down, they're going to wait until it's a slam dunk for them, or they're going to try to.
And I know that, I mean, you've mentioned it yourself, is that it can be very expensive to shoot down what can often be, I mean, if it's a fighter jet, then a missile for a jet is, I guess, a pretty good trade in terms of finances. But if you're shooting down a cheap decoy drone with an expensive missile, then you get into sort of cost-benefit questions. In terms of NATO's response to this, and I know that they've announced Operation Eastern Sentry, and so there are now collective policies and procedures for the aerial defense of this eastern flank. In terms of NATO's capacity, I know that that a lot has been drawn down to support Ukraine, and Russia has a militarized economy and so on. In terms of NATO's ability to sort of really ramp up its defenses of its eastern flank, do you feel that they're in a good position to step on the gas here? Or if Russia really decided to, let's say that they do shoot down something, Russia responds by increasing the incursions, is NATO going to run out of missiles in a week? Or what's their situation?
I don't know.
Right.
My instinct is to say they can sort this out.
Mm-hmm.
But I would also say the performance in Poland was, I'm sure, disappointing to everybody.
Mm. Because they wanted to shoot down more than three or four?
Well, and I think...
And not blow up
ideally
stuff on the ground.
To do it at lower cost, right? Mm-hmm. So, it's... it really did look a little bizarre in the Polish case.
Is there an easy fix there? Or does it require pulling away all the aid for Ukraine and dumping it in?
I don't think it requires pulling away all the aid for Ukraine by any means.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it requires some thinking about what you can do and how you can combine resources from different countries and what you need in terms of ground-based air defenses that you've got stationed in your territory and where you station them, as opposed to what you're going to try to do from aircraft that has to take off somewhere and then shoot missiles. So these are all the things that they have to factor in. And no, I don't think they're postured for massive harassment incursions from Russia, because why would you be postured for massive harassment incursions from Moscow? So I think if this continues, it probably makes a lot of sense for NATO members to think about creative and asymmetrical ways to respond too. Though I'm not sure NATO is great at creativity and asymmetric responses.
Mm. Okay. And this is, I'll ask you to speculate here. Obviously, they've announced this Eastern Sentry operation, and the Baltic states and Poland, I don't know if you'd describe it as lockstep, but they seem to be making similar, their signaling is similar. Do you find that that's being received seriously in Western Europe? I mean, this isn't even to ask. I'm not even asking you to comment on what Trump's attitude is, because I'm
not
sure.
Well, he said
shoot him down.
Most recently, he said shoot everything down.
Right. But he also kind of said good luck, right? Like, it wasn't unclear to what degree.
I thought the good luck was to the Ukrainians and the Russians, but I do get confused by what Trump says.
I suppose you're right. But it wasn't clear to me that the shoot them down is we're going to be there to shoot them down. It seemed more
No. I mean, yeah. Trump's comments and his social media posts suggest a kind of a sense in which if you just read those, you wouldn't know that the United States is a member of the NATO alliance.
Right, right. Yeah, but it, yeah. Okay, and so what about in the rest of the NATO alliance?
I think the rest of the NATO alliance is going to back up any choice that member states make. And in fact, given the fact that it is other NATO aircraft and assets that are involved in these operations each time, I mean, these are NATO responses on the territory of specific member states, because the defenses are generally pretty joint.
Right. Thanks for listening, folks. That's the show. If you're one of those rare souls who listens to podcasts all the way to the final seconds, bless your heart. And please consider making a recurring donation to Medusa to help sustain our work. Yes, that's right. Your reward for sticking around until the end is to hear a request from me to you for your money. That'll teach you. Thanks again. Until next time.